2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Apologies to the great Jenny Green and her team for crashing in at the end of our show. We are incredibly excited. The boys in green are in action tonight. It's Wednesday, the 24th of March.
I'm just surprised you actually don't do it more often, to be honest. Coming up on Game On tonight, can Stephen Kenny's boys in green buck the odds and give us some long-awaited qualification glory? We've got live commentary from 7:45 and we're hoping for more moments like this.
And Randall sends it long. Shane Long's in behind the defence. Shane Long against Moyer. 1-0! What a moment! Shane Long, Ireland take the lead.
What a moment is right. We love it. We'll be previewing the upcoming Women's National League with Emma Duffy.
Outswinging corner this time towards the edge of the box. Flicked on. Flicked on again. Chance at the back post. And it's 3. PMH United have scored again. It looks like it's Anya O'Gorman. And that is it. Piemont United are the 2020 Women's National League champions.
With players across all codes dreaming of training, never mind matches, we check in on the GAA scene with Damien Lawler.
Catch from Bonham Bar from Darren Gleeson's puck out. He's going for it. He hits it. It's in the back of the net. Owen Murphy almost had it, but it got under the body. Straight from Gleeson's puck out. Here comes Bonham Bar. Brilliant goal for Tipperary.
And with a new Centre of Basketball Excellence opening in NUIG, we talked to Anya McDonough, and Connor Quinn about the rapid development.
Bass steals the outlet pass. Way to James! A thunderous dunk and the crowd fired up.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
I think we're all still trying to figure out the starting 11 for Stephen Kenny's game later on. So if anybody has any suggestions, please text us, send it in, send in your predicted starting 11. We will put it to the panellists later, and also we'll have Tony O'Donoghue in very, very shortly to go through all of what he thinks could happen when that game kicks off a little bit later on. Remember, you can stay with us because we do have live commentary with Adrian Eames and Pat Fenlon coming up a little bit later on. But we've got a full Game On to come first. As you just heard, there is a lot happening. And Dunica, we didn't get to talk about Bundy Aki yesterday. It just broke before we went off on air, just after we went on off air. He's been handed a four-match ban.
Four-game ban, yeah, for his tackle on Billy Vanapola on the 64th minute against England. Obviously, it's disappointing news for Connacht coming into games now like the Rainbow Cup, and they've been going really well. But Marie, I know, and look, I don't think there was any malice in what Bundy did, but we're trying to eliminate it from the game. And I think the consequences have to be really high so players' behaviours change, and I think that's what we're going to see. If players like Bundy Aki, and we've seen it even with Devin Toner, you just can't travel that high anymore, and you have to change the way you enter into a tackle from now on. And look, I'm gutted for him because he always goes out and gives it his all, but I think it's the right thing that there's consequences.
Can you practice that, Donica? Like, is there a way to change the way you tackle in training? Are they going to be doing that now?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, if you look at the two big areas, probably contesting balls in the air. That was a big one before. We saw an awful lot of players getting hit in the air, and then all of a sudden they just bring in red cards for it, and all of a sudden it's gone out of the game. So it's the only way, Marie, that players change their behaviour. It's unfortunate. You would think if you rewarded people, you know, that it would change. It doesn't. I think the only thing that changes, certainly in rugby, is consequences. There has to be a punishment. But there was more good news today. There is a study in the University of Birmingham. And in my last year in Worcester, we went through this, a simple saliva test. So a bit like if anyone's been COVID tested, very similar to that. And it's 94% accurate for testing for concussion. So this should hopefully make things an awful lot easier for pitch side assessments. I remember when we were in it, it was 2018 when I was in Worcester for it, and they were saying, we're going to get all this information for you, but it's not going to be much good for you. It's a next generation on. But to see 3 years on that we're probably assessing and getting the accuracy of a diagnosis for concussion down to kind of 94% through studies like this is brilliant to see. So look, Marie, they're all the kind of good stuff that you want to go into the game. We also got the Scottish team for Friday's night's game against France. It's really odd to have the Six Nations kind of...
I'd nearly forgotten about this game.
And this is a bit of a freebie, but I think it's a bit of a miracle match. Scotland have made four changes and Romain Intermac will start for France. So it'll be a brilliant game. But France know exactly what they need to do. And Marie, that is an advantage. We had it one time with Munster versus Gloucester. It went down to be known as a miracle match. But France are chasing a lead, so they need four tries and a 21 point scoring range. So they know exactly. Like, it's a bit wrong that France are probably getting rewarded for going out and eating waffles in Italy and breaking COVID restrictions, but they know exactly what they need to do to win a championship. It should be a brilliant game.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of brilliant games, I hope we get a brilliant game tonight when the Republic of Ireland take on Serbia. And I'm delighted to say that Tony O'Donoghue, RT soccer correspondent, is with us. Although, Tony, in reality, it doesn't matter if it's a beautiful game as long as it's a game where the result is positive.
Oh, that's all we want, isn't it? You know, just to add to the tension, I'm on the official FIFA app, which has a countdown. So the match starts in 1 hour, 36 minutes and 3 seconds.
I've one of them for Santa, Tony.
Oh yeah, so it should be exciting. I think I'm more nervous than excited. I'm hopeful, of course, but concerned as well, because look, an important start, a good start, and this is everything. It really makes such a difference. There's been already naysayers about Stephen Kenny's regime, even though, you know, I will still say that considering the COVID and the injuries and whatever, that it's been an extraordinary time. It can't be judged on the first 8 matches, but as we were saying yesterday, the results haven't been great. So that needs to change, and it needs to change tonight. He is without key players. He's had big decisions to make, and we'll know in the next half hour or so what the team is. And that will tell us so much about Stephen Kenny. It'll tell us so much about his ambition, whether he's prepared to stick to his principles, where he wants to pass the ball around. He doesn't want, he said it very clearly, he doesn't want a low defensive block. He doesn't want to just knock it long into the channels. He wants to, you know, create and prosper with a new Irish brand of football. And he believes that we can, you know, stick it up against the rest of the world and do that.
Believe we can, Tony?
I believe we can pass the ball better. I believe that that's always been in an Irish football team. And sometimes when we go to places like this, there's a lot of fear. I mentioned that the last time we played them, the last opening game of the World Cup qualifying campaign was also in what they call the Maracanã, the Red Star Stadium. And we took an early lead with Jeff Hendrick, and then we sat back because that's what we do. I mean, I often think with all Irish teams, I mean, I'd be interested in Dunica's view on that. It was the case for a long time with the rugby team as well. It was almost a psychological issue. I think that we you know, shrink back into ourselves, and there's a caution that takes over. It's almost an inferiority complex. If we were to take the lead tonight, part of me would be thrilled, I'd be jumping up and down, but part of me would be, particularly if we get an early lead, I'd be going, you know, brings us all the way back to 88 and the early goal in Stuttgart.
The messages, Tony, are different now though. Like, you know, in times gone by, we were, I suppose, told so many times that we didn't have the players, but now we're being told by Stephen Kenny that we can go out and do this, that we have an ability to go and play football.
Well, I've never ever consider that we've never had the players, because every generation brings a new crop, and that new crop, as you look back, I was looking back at the Euro 2012 campaign the last week or so, and you know, we had Richard Dunne and John O'Shea at the heart of the defence, and you know, before that people were saying, oh, we don't have Mick McCarthy, or we don't have Steve Staunton anymore, or we don't have, there's always, we had Paul McGrath, we had Kevin Moran, there's always players come through, and right now we have Dara O'Shea. I don't know if he's going to start. That's the key question tonight. Will Shane Duffy start? And if that's the case, well, Has the team come out? Have you got
I haven't
it
got it yet.
All right, so I thought you were suggesting that it's out there. I think that's a key thing. We saw with Seamus yesterday in the press conference, and indeed with Stephen Kenny, both extolling the virtues, as I would too, of Shane Duffy's character, of his, you know, past experiences in a green shirt, of his goal-scoring threat for Ireland, but he hasn't played. And, you know, if you're to take a dispassionate decision, if you haven't been playing, and a lot of our players haven't, you know, how much is that going to affect your performance? Also, if you want to play out from the back, if you want to play through the thirds, is Shane the man comfortable in possession to do that? He'll put his head anywhere, he'll get a goal for you, he'll make a last-ditch tackle, and maybe we need a bit of that as well. And maybe they'll be more intimidated by him, and he has more experience. So I think whether it's to be Darragh O'Shea or Shane Duffy, that's going to be the key question in selection. But I am excited, I am concerned, but I am hopeful.
Tony, you mentioned we haven't the teams yet, but Serbia, where are the threats there? You mentioned, of course, there's no fans in the ground, which I feel is always an advantage when you go to a hostile place, but what can we expect from them?
Especially there, because, I mean, their ultras have a fierce reputation in terms of how they support the team. They've got some terrific individuals. Dusan Tadic, who captained the side, the new manager, made it very clear that he's his man. He's with Ajax now, and you know he will present a threat. I'd like to see if they start Mitrovic, the Fulham player, because that might be like Stephen Kenny might be even waiting for that to see if Mitrovic plays. Then maybe I will play Duffy. But Luka Jovic, Real Madrid player, at the moment with Eintracht Frankfurt, Milinkovic-Savic, very very good player. I think their players, their top players, are their striking, their attacking threat. Not so good. They've conceded a lot of goals at the back, but it's a new journey, a new manager, a new regime for them as well. And you know they were beaten by Scotland in the Euro playoff. That didn't go down well with them. They've got a lot of good individuals. They haven't always produced good teams.
Tony, you spoke to Seamus Coleman, the Republic of Ireland captain, and what was coming out of it and a lot of what we heard is just how much these players want to play for their country. They want to represent Ireland and they're determined to go out and do a good job. Let's hear some of that.
We've got players in here hungry to do well and happy to be here for their country. So it's a tough game for us, but like always, we all give it our all. You know, I can't explain how much I've missed it. You know, it's been something that it's been on my mind. You know, I love playing for my country, and I can't even remember when the last one was. It might have been my sending off. It might have been my last for Ireland, which very long time. Obviously, then I came in, and you know, my frame of mind is I want Ireland to get to the World Cup. My frame of mind is never about my last chance this, my last chance that. I want to play for my country. When that ends, that ends. But it's never a case of, this could be my last one. I want a World Cup for the lads that are here, for the fans at home, whether it be the last, second last, whatever the case may be, I don't care. I just want a World Cup for the country. And I've had my time, I've had my Euros, I've had my caps behind me, and I'm not thinking of this could be the last one. That doesn't enter my mind whatsoever. There's a bigger picture than it being Seamus Coleman's last chance at a World Cup, definitely.
Tony, we might be undercooked match preparation-wise, but just listening to your chat there with Seamus, there's a massive emotional buy-in. Does that count when it comes to international level?
Oh, I think it has to, yeah. I think Seamus has been terrific in the build-up to this game. As a captain, as a leader, I think he, you know, he has the experience. He hasn't always been that vocal. Seamus, I think, is quite a quiet and reserved person, but he's taken on the mantle this time very much so. And you know, he's defended the manager. There was the issue over when he was put out for the press conference in the first game, knowing that Matt Doherty was chosen ahead of him by Stephen Kenny, and there was some comment about that in the media, and he faced that one head on yesterday. He's been bullish, but he's also been the sort you can imagine to talk to the younger players, put the arm around them and get fellas' heads in the right direction. It is quite such a different squad in so many ways for so many reasons, and quite a young squad as well. And I think Seamus has perfectly set the tone. So, I mean, undoubtedly, in my view, he has to play. He has to play, and I'm sure he will. But we're now 1 minute, 1 hour, 1 hour 28 minutes and 29 seconds away.
Oh, 1 hour.
So, Tony, we know that the Serbians have come out and said that they're not going to sit back and take a draw. They want to go out and win the game. And look, undoubtedly, Ireland, a draw would be a good result, but it would be great to get out and win the game. And to do that, you need to go and score goals. And it is the million-dollar question. And I think everybody has been going over and back about who could potentially get it. We're not sure who's going to start up front, but who do you think, Tony, should start up front?
Well, it looks like I'm getting a lineup coming up here now. We have Coleman, Stevens, Clark, Doherty is playing, Brown, Connolly, Robinson, Malumbi, Cullen, and O'Shea. So let's look at that. So that'll be Seamus Coleman will play at right back, and the Stevens will play at left back. Clark will play at centre half. So who will be the other centre half? O'Shea. So it's going to be Dara O'Shea. So he's made that big call, and I'm glad he has. He's made that big call that it's not the right time for now to bring Shane Duffy back into the team. That was an emotional call, but that tells us so much about Stephen Kenny's thinking, and I think that's a really good call. In midfield then, we've got Brown, Malumbi. That's an interesting one, because
wasn't
I thought
in the conversation too
much. I thought that to be fair, I thought that Jason Knight was in the conversation and Cullen was in the conversation, but it's Cullen, Brown and Malumbi. And there's no Hendrick in that lineup. That's really interesting, isn't it?
Because the conversation wasn't very much about needing that experienced player, even though it didn't have the form at the moment, still had turned up for Ireland on many occasions and at that level.
Yeah, and so up front we've got Connolly. And
Robinson.
And Robinson, yeah. So, I mean, that could even be a 4-4-2. Like Doherty's position is going to be very interesting in that one as well.
You've answered the question there. Who's there to score the goals for us, Tony? And it looks like it's going to be Callum Robinson or Aaron Connolly all going to plan.
Yeah. That's an interesting team selection and very, very indicative of Stephen Kenny's thoughts. So
do you think it's reflective of potentially playing that open passing game that he wants to play? Or are we going to get a bit of mixture of both, maybe?
Well, Dara O'Shea has been playing games. That's important. I mean, Big Sam Allardyce left him out a little bit. Then there was a red card and he got back into the West Brom team, and before that he'd been playing every game, and he's playing football and he's comfortable with the ball at his feet, and I think that's really good. I think that's a very, very important decision. But Malumbi, that's the big surprise for me, I have to say. Cullen, I was expecting it because he's mentioned him a lot. He said how going to Anderlecht was a good decision for him. And Brown has been very good for Ireland. I have to think he's one of the better players. But Hendrick will be perhaps surprised.
He's playing a lot of players around the centre there that are playing games regularly as well, rather than maybe Connolly and Robinson up front. So the sharpness is going to come around the middle, and hopefully the players that are under Cook will get to the pace of it very, very quickly. Connolly is an interesting one, because there was a suggestion that perhaps he wouldn't start because he has been a little bit erratic at times.
Well, the word that Stephen Kenny used yesterday was a bit undercooked. And that's why they were saying when they were training in the stadium last night, he wanted them to hit the back of the net as much as they could, just to get used to the feeling. Let's hope he hits the back of the net later. Yeah, so undercooked, there's going to be a bit of a doubt about that, but he's been a huge fan, even at under-21 level, of Aaron Connolly, and he has great potential. This Irish team has great potential, and that's what we're hoping
and
for.
And isn't it the most perfect game to step up as well? Because we spoke yesterday, Tony, about how it did feel like there was a sense, okay, let's park those last eight games. We're starting again. We have a new campaign. There was a lot of optimism, a lot of excitement. He was calm. And if that can come out in the players, look, who knows what they can deliver.
Exactly. I've got to go, I'm afraid, because once that team is out, I've got to go and do a pre-match interview.
We understand, Tony. So, we're going to take a very quick break anyway.
Good to talk to you again, guys. Take care.
Game on UFM. With Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Welcome back. Now, the Republic of Ireland women's team will begin their preparations for the 2023 Women's World Cup with two international friendly games in April. It is absolutely fantastic to see that the Vera Powell's team are going to be hosting Denmark in Tallaght Stadium on the 8th of April and then travelling to Belgium for a game in on Sunday the 11th of April. And we know that the qualifying draw for the World Cup is scheduled to take place on the 30th of April. So this will give Vera Powell lots of time to work with her squad and to figure out who she is going to entrust to take on these very crucial qualifiers. I'm delighted to say that Emma Duffy from the 42 is with us to talk through this squad announcement and also to look ahead to the start of the Women's National League, which is happening at the weekend. Emma, let's start with the international team, because there is a lot of representation from the Women's National League in it, which is really, really, really good to see. And two names I know that you were looking at and have been keeping an eye on were Claire Shine and Stephanie Roach, were two returning faces among the forwards.
Yeah, absolutely, Marie. Fantastic news, obviously, for the national team to have two friendlies to look forward to. It's been a long, long time since they were last in action before Christmas. So fantastic that they're going to get back on the road and back at it again. And obviously, the new campaign coming up is so important. So yeah, you mentioned Claire Shine and Stephanie Roach there. Great to see them both back involved. I suppose Claire has had a really difficult year off the pitch, and it's just a testament to her character to see her there in the squad, back where she belongs, and really enjoying her football again. So delighted to see that. And then Stephanie Roach obviously has kind of been in and out a little bit. Last season, I know she struggled quite a bit with injury on the domestic front, and that hampered her international chances. So I think she really sent out a statement of intent in the cup final before Christmas, scoring two fantastic goals with a brilliant performance, and she's back in the running now. So yeah, she's one of 10 domestic players included, which is a huge boost for the Women's National League, particularly with it coming back this weekend. And you know, it's richly deserved. They won't all be there, I'd imagine, when the squad is cut down closer to the time, but I suppose it's that nice confidence going into this weekend ahead of a fantastic programme of games.
Yeah, Emma, it's brilliant to get that experience as well. But the friendlies, Denmark on the Thursday the 8th of April and then Belgium on the 11th, those calibre of games must be important for Vera and the squad.
Yeah, definitely. And I think just getting back on the pitch and getting back together in camp is so important. I suppose just a quick look at the world rankings, however little or much they mean. Ireland are ranked 31st, Denmark are 14th, and Belgium are 17th. So, like, it's going to be testing. But I do think Ireland can go out and get results. And, you know, we see the quality in this team. And where they left off, I suppose, in their final qualifier against Germany for the Euros before Christmas, they lost, but it was such a promising and performance full of potential. And I think if they can pick up where they left off, you know, it's really exciting times, and hopefully now in the World Cup qualification campaign they can finally go and qualify for a first major tournament. So I was speaking to Anya Gorman during the week, and you know, she said it's long overdue. There's been too many kind of hard luck stories at this stage, and I do think the time is now, and really excited to see them get back in action.
Oh, definitely. I think I'm so sick of saying those words, qualifying for a major tournament. I just want them to get there now so we can actually talk about them being at a major tournament, and I really think they will. She's bringing through a lot of really young players as well, which is great to see. Emily Whelan, Jamie Finn, Jessica Zhu, and Ava O'Mahony, Ellen Malloy as well there. So really, really good players. So let's move on to the Women's National League, which is starting this weekend. And again, look, just brilliant to see that it is coming back when sport is professional sport is back. I know they're amateurs, but the fact that they're elite sportswomen and they're going to be back playing and they've been able to train and prepare for this, just given everything that's happened over the last year, it's just, I think, a mark maybe of the progress as well that this Women's League has made, the fact that they're in that bracket, they're elite and they're back, and also they have a new sponsor. You can watch the games on LOI TV as well. All this sort of stuff is brilliant to see. So let's start with Wexford and Piemont. And I think I've been speaking to Stephanie Roach a bit myself as well, and they've obviously done the double last year, but doing the double-double will be very much on their mind this year, Emma.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think it's all eyes on this one. Piemont, you know, they're the holders, they're the people everyone wants to hunt down, and obviously going for three in a row, there is a little bit of pressure on them, but they're a title winning squad, they know how to win, and there's nice continuity there, I suppose, not many changes. I think Niamh Farrelly is probably the biggest loss after heading to Glasgow, and Louise Corrigan, actually, who Niamh originally replaced at centre back. She came in from midfield, but Louise has gone to the LR Wave. So there have been a few losses, but look at the calibre of players there and the experience. As you mentioned, Stephanie Roach, Anya Gorman, Karen Duggan, just to name three. Like, it's unbelievable. But yeah, really looking forward to seeing them play Wexford. Wexford team is always an absolute thriller, and I don't see this one being any different. Even just from speaking to Kylie Murphy, the Wexford captain, they're really up for it, and I think they're really hurting after last year, because, you know, a year without silverware is one they consider unsuccessful. So I think they'll be really looking to make amends this year, and what better way to start than against the champions.
I mentioned Kim Flood to Dunica yesterday, that she had played 15s rugby, and she was a sister of Stacey Flood, who was now in the Ireland women's rugby squad. Well, she'll be one of the main players, I'd imagine, for Wexford youth, signing for them. She's played so many sports at top level. She's unbelievable. But now she'll be doing her thing with Wexford youth this year, and they have a lot of depth now in that squad.
Yeah, definitely. You say Kim there, you know, she's one of many new additions to the league this season. I was just looking through the FAI's club by club previews. They're fantastic. I'd, you know, encourage everyone to have a quick look before Saturday. But Kim is just one of many players coming from other codes. I suppose another is Laurie Ryan. Really interested to see how she gets on coming from Clare football setup.
I was about to say Clare woman, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Flying the flag. So yeah, there's strength and depth right through the league, and you know, huge strides have been made this off season. As you mentioned, all the games free and live on LOI TV. SSE Airtricity coming in as a sponsor. Prize money being bumped up in under 19 league to bridge the gap between 17s and senior. And I think now the onus is on players to really just perform on the pitch and keep those standards high. It's something that Anya O'Gorman stressed in that interview earlier this week. That, you know, it's over to the players now to keep this going and to keep this momentum going. But what a great way to start, and just really looking forward to all the games on Saturday. And I'd imagine they just can't wait to get back at it. There's only so much training and friendly matches you can play, and you know, Women's National League players are well accustomed to pre-season at this stage after the past 12 months. So really looking forward to seeing it happen this Saturday.
It was in those FAI previews that I figured, or found out, that Ruth Fahey is back playing with Galway, which is unbelievable. I thought that she had finished, but there's still some life in her yet. I'd say those knees have probably taken a bit of a battering, but it's great to see her, the calibre of that player, re-entering the league. You know, it's just brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one I think that has kind of gone under the radar a little bit, but yeah, Ruth has absolutely still got it, and you know, she can talk the talk, as we've seen as a pundit, and she can definitely walk the walk on the pitch. So yeah, really excited to see her. And I suppose Galway, they seem to have had a pretty good pre-season, few friendly wins, and you know, a lot of teams have been really active in the off-season. Shelburne probably most notably so. Obviously, Noel King coming in there as manager, huge statement of intent, someone who knows Irish women's football inside out. And Saoirse Noonan, arguably the biggest signing of the close season. Chloe Mustaki, another, like, two international standard players coming into Shells there. And they were so, so close last year. I think that, you know, they're really targeting glory this year. So, yeah, teammates would want to watch their backs, but I don't think they'll get too carried away with that. But this, like, it's fantastic, obviously, to see that the gap is closing. You know, it could be any one of the teams that go and do it, and hopefully we'll see a few surprises, because, you know, that makes it all a little bit more interesting too.
Yeah, that's what you want. Like, it's great to be sitting here at the start of the season and not knowing who's going to win, and knowing that you're going to get a really good battle for the title, and even just that there will be so many tightly contested games, because as you said, like, the gap is closing, the teams are getting better, so there might be one or two that are at the top regularly, but the ones coming up behind are really chasing them. And I think Cork City, okay, they didn't have the cup final that they wanted, but they showed a huge amount of promise, and their journey last year, I think in general, will really stand to them. Okay, they don't have Saoirse Noonan this year, but they do have a lot of young players and seem to have that good mix of youth and experience there.
Yeah, definitely. Look, Cork are a team to always watch out for. I suppose they really announced themselves last season. A lot of players came of age. The one thing, they have lost quite a few, not only Saoirse, ahead of this season. But look, be interesting to see how they bounce back. And You look at Galway, we've covered them a little bit already. DLR Waves, they've had a really active off-season too. And, you know, they'll definitely come into the reckoning and fancy themselves. And then if you look at Bohemians, Athlone Town and Treaty United, you know, the three newer teams who kind of just came into the league last year, they put down a fantastic first season. And I know there's all this talk of second season syndrome and can they keep it up? But I definitely back them too, and I think they'll back themselves. So, yeah, it should be a big one. It should be another fantastic one. I think the standards have really come on over the last few years. And, you know, maybe there wasn't always that correlation with developments off the pitch. But I do think, you know, we've seen that this off-season, that the SAI really do believe in the league. And you know, hopefully now it can be taken to the next level. And I think the players are definitely going to do it on the pitch.
Yeah, and like also having the under-17s and under-19s brackets of leagues coming through as well, like the step up before, it was just too far, I think, too far to go from 17s to senior level and miss out on the development. So having an under-19s league will really help and, you know, keep the players involved, because we know, Emma, how difficult it is to keep the girls playing when they get to a certain age, and you need that, and you need them to have a really strong league. And I think the combination of having good teams in the league and then also seeing that the league can be a springboard if you want to go away and play in different countries, but also if you want to go and play for your country as well. And that has to be one of the main things, that if you want to stay at home and finish your education or go and get a job and play in the league, and you still have an opportunity to go on and represent your country.
Absolutely, and just bringing it back to the start, I suppose the fact that there's, you know, 10 women's national league players in a provisional international squad, like, that's huge, and that speaks volumes for the league and the potential that is there. And yeah, as you say, look, I suppose player retention is an issue in women's sport across the board. I think whatever the reason may be, it's just not as much of an issue in men's sport. But, you know, looking at, I suppose, college and work, and girls want to go abroad, and just not the same opportunities being there, this under-19s league is definitely just fantastic to kind of bridge that gap and to keep players involved. And as you say, you know, just have that pathway there for the next generation coming through too, because that's what it's all about at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's vitally important, Emma. So call it, I know it's really far out, but something that we can play back to in time. Can Piemont do a double this year? Just when it comes to the league in itself, who do you think will be on top?
I hate the way you mean Piemont or Shelf. I think I'm gonna go with Shelburne just to shake things up a little bit. I suppose they've been really busy in the off season. They were quite close last year, and I'd just be confident in them going and doing something special this year. But I don't want to write Piemont off at all. They're a title winning squad, they know the league inside out. But yeah, I think just my gut feeling, I might go with Shelburne for this one.
And who do you think is going to make the biggest improvement? Because there are some new teams in the league and teams that are just getting up and going.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think Bohemians have quite a bit of potential there, and they seem really serious about their women's team. I suppose, you know, they want to do everything properly, and we've seen that over the last year or so. But I suppose Galway have been thereabouts the last few years. Last year was quite disappointing, so they need a big one this year. But I think for me, it could be DLR Waves. You know, they've looked good in pre-season, so I think I'd tip them to, you know, to make the next step this year and to really challenge for top four.
Okay, Emma Duffy, interesting as always, and I think I speak for the two of us and Dunica as well when I say we're really looking forward to the start of the league. And if anybody wants to check it out, it will be on LOI TV, and it's all the games are free, you can't miss it. Emma, thanks so many. We're going to take a very quick break.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
Game on football.
Now, if anybody missed the Republic of Ireland team to play Serbia very, very shortly with the live commentary here on Game On, I'm going to run through it very, very quickly. Mark Travers, Seamus Coleman, Enda Stevens, Kieran Clark, Matt Doherty, Alan Brown, Aaron Connolly, Callum Robinson, Jason Malumbi,
Josh Cullen and Dara O'Shea. So a very interesting one there, and a lot of people are trying to figure out what formation he is going to play, and we can mull over it very, very shortly with Kenny Cunningham and Stephen Elliott. Now let's turn our attention to Gaelic games, and today the GAA contacted counties to offer an update on the latest developments around the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, and they reiterated that there is no decision on which competitions will take place in 2021. So we're just going to have to watch and wait for a little bit longer. The association also clarified that the expected 12th of April return to training in Northern Ireland did not apply to inter-county panels. They remain barred from collective sessions. To look into the future, I'm delighted to say we are joined by Damien Lawler. Damien.
Marie, I thought I was going to be talking about the soccer team actually, because there's much more to discuss there, and the formation should be 10-1. Just have one lad up front, and apart from Jason Knight, it looks like a very strong team, I think. Anyway, my expertise allegedly is GEA, so I'll stick to that. We're at a very interesting juncture now, in that I don't believe we're far away from some threads of information coming through, but often when you're on a journey and you get to the final destination, the last little point of it is the most frustrating part. And I think there's movement in terms of obviously club players and young kids being allowed resume activity in the north, in the six counties, from April the 12th onwards. People were wondering then, would that apply to inter-county teams? But it never would. I think the reasoning behind that is, whatever about clubs getting back and youth-level players getting back, that's for well-being and wellness and activity, and why would you stop them? But there's no competitive element to that. With inter-county, hopefully the season won't be too far around the corner, and I don't think it's fair for any county to get a leap ahead. So, I mean, in an ideal world, Marie, you'd be hoping that inter-county teams, both north and south, will get back very soon at the same juncture. And I think the GAA are still hoping for that. Excuse me. In the meantime, we keep waiting for maybe kind of a roadmap to come from the government. And we hear today that InFit won't have their kind of final briefing until next Monday. So that's a little bit of a blow. Certainly will reduce the speculation over the weekend, I think, because a final call won't be made until Tuesday next week. But I'd be feeling that by the end of next week, the GEA should be in a position to offer some more clarity to counties and clubs from the 32 counties. And I think the overall hope is that post-Easter, some element of activity in earnest can resume once more.
So do you think we're still going to have the league, Damien?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I think there's every... Okay, with every passing week and there's no activity, the league is more and more in danger. But I would feel from what I've been hearing, and a document that I've read, a proposed document, that maybe one item of the fixture schedule that could be under massive pressure would be the backdoor in the football championship. That could maybe make way. But I think the league is essential from a few points of view. It gives teams a lead-in, a chance to extend their pre-season, for want of a better word. It gives them a chance to use developmental players and to get players back to fitness. If the GEA doesn't hold the National League, there's a fear that challenge matches could break out in a more unregulated manner. So I think we could possibly see a National League runoff in 5 weeks in both codes, and that's not a big ask to come in on the back of a four-week pre-season. So while every passing week with no activity it puts the league in more danger, we're not at that juncture yet, because the GEA will have allowed until after Easter for the league to go ahead. So it's still very much in the plans, but until the government come forward with more kind of information and more insight, only then will the GEA react. I do believe the GEA have probably two or three scenario plans in waiting. They're just waiting to be told what's possible and what's not, and they'll react to that then.
Damien, I have a few Ulster teammates that are busy booking tea times, and I understand that it has to be fair for everyone, but and you don't want anyone getting an advantage. But is it a little bit unfair, because we have seen different counties during the lockdown restricted from training and everyone else went on? So now the COVID, yeah. I know it's an advantage, but it's a COVID problem as opposed to a logistical problem within the GAA.
Yeah, I think at some stages last year, Donegal, likes of Kildare, Leash and Offaly had extended lockdowns when the rest of the country didn't. And as a result, there's 11 counties still with outstanding 2020 club championships to finish off. So that's a factor the whole time. The GAA has always, where possible, been about one approach for the 32 counties. Very sensitive, very emotive issue with the six counties. And I think even last year when cases were were very, very low in the south and high in the north. I think the tendency was to wait for one approach. And I think the window, I know what you're saying about players in the north should be free to go back, but they'll be free to go back with their clubs, and I think for now that's enough of a window. Obviously inter-county teams will be itching to get back as well. There's a danger that if inter-county teams within those six counties were allowed back to train, that the temptation for other teams in the country would be huge to resist trying to mobilise some form of informal training, and that just leads to problems down the line. The fact then that the season is hopefully so soon around the corner, the GAA doesn't really want anybody to gain an advantage in terms of a competitive edge. And certainly if the six counties teams were allowed back 3 to 4 weeks before their southern counterparts, with the league only around the corner and the championship following straight on from that, that would be deemed an unfair advantage. I don't think anybody begrudges anybody in those counties getting back out on April the 12th with their clubs and with youths and with underage teams. However, for inter-county, I think they're trying to keep an even keel on that. And I think that's maybe the basis behind that approach, Donica.
Damien, I really admire your confidence now that everyone will just stick to the rules, because that's not always the case in these things.
Yeah, and I think the GAA today released a fairly strict list of, you know, we'll say, groups of 15 people, Marie, in pods. Full contact is permitted in the north as well. Use of dressing rooms not permitted. Clubs should abide by the Gaelic Games return to play document. And that's maybe where I'll just break away from the point that you're making. I think the stakes are so high, and we saw with two counties post-Christmas where restrictions were broken and sanctions were levied. Maybe some people will feel that there could have been more action, but I just think the appetite out there from the public is so kind of everybody's so frustrated. There's no tolerance for anybody really breaking the rule now, and there's no appetite for it. That's not to say teams won't try, and I think the GAA are very, very keen that there wouldn't be a huge window before activity could be resumed, and that maybe both jurisdictions could get back around the same time. That ultimately would be the same goal, that all 32 counties could get back post-Easter. Have to say, there's a lot of work being done behind the scenes. Certainly the government are well aware of the need to go back. Outdoors has been mentioned 4 or 5 times by key ministers, so I'd be very hopeful. I mean, against all the odds, last year championships were played off, and I think this time around it's felt like nearly half the season is gone already. But the GAA have a template in place, and I think there is still a great chance of meaningful games taking place this summer.
And I guess as well, Damien, like, we've all been here before now at this stage, you know what I mean? As in, the clubs know how to run their setups underage, know how to go to a back, we're all know how to fill out COVID forms, we know who the COVID officers are, and likewise in inter-county setups. It's kind of nearly familiar territory now at this stage, which is terrible.
It is. And you guys probably know that, certainly in this house, when you're filling out a form for yourself as a coach and two or three kids, the questionnaires are an absolute nightmare at times, but like 12 million of them were completed successfully last year. And it enabled, and when you're queuing to get into the GAA pitch and the COVID supervisor is there with the clipboard and being so regimented, it's another nightmare. But this is the reason we got back safely. Mm-hmm. 71,000 kids in a cool camp with only one case not directly linked. So it's a really fabulous staff from last year. The template is in place, and I think there's a certain amount of confidence built in that when they finally get the green light. The lack of information is really frustrating from everybody's behalf, and the GAA can't even act upon it, and that's really the hold up at this stage. I think the final point to make, Marie and Donica, Enfit have always said they want the vaccine rollout to be comprehensive, they want the case numbers to be low, the vulnerable to be protected, and the virus in the community to be quite low. None of those boxes are fully ticked yet, hence the delay, and we have to proceed with extreme caution from now, but we should be able to get there soon enough, I hope.
So Damien, final word on it. Do you think we're going to have a good summer with some Gaelic games then?
Yeah, I do. I can see if things go to plan and we're back when we think we'll be back, I could see a National League. I could see the back door maybe losing out in football but remaining in hurling. I think we had a good championship last year. The crowds not being there is horrible, to be honest with you. But I think for the viewer at home, it's great to have something to latch on to just to be able to watch it. And I think straight into a successful club championship, at which stage, hopefully the vaccine rollout will be comprehensive enough to let people back into big stadiums, maybe 200 or 300 at a time, start off that way and try to get back to some bit of normality. But I think even when it comes to 2022, we'll still feel the after effects. But if we can manage to get inter-county and club championships played off in any shape or form this year, it'll be another success story.
Damien, you've Marie close to tears. Fair play. Thanks so much for joining us on Game On. Enjoy the match. Hopefully we won't play your formation, but we'll go all right.
Hopefully we will and get a point.
We'll talk to you soon. We're back after this break and chatting basketball.
Game On 2FM with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein. Game On 2FM.
Welcome back. The clock is counting down to the Republic of Ireland's big game against Serbia. We will be chatting very shortly to Kenny Cunningham and Stephen Elliott about the Republic of Ireland team. And for anyone who missed it, UEFA are actually going for a 4-3-3, although some people are suggesting it's a 3-5-2. But what UEFA have down is Coleman, O'Shea, Clark and Stevens across the back four, Malumbi, Cullen and Brown the centre, Doherty on the right, Robinson through the centre and Connolly on the left. So that is their interpretation of it. We will chat about it in a little while. But now it is time to talk basketball, because there was some good news for Basketball Ireland yesterday. It was announced that they're rolling out an ambitious plans for 8 to 10 centres of excellence, which are going to be located nationwide. So NUI Galway and Ulster University in Jordanstown were announced as the first two centres of excellence, which is absolutely brilliant. They've signed an agreement with Basketball Ireland this month, and I'm delighted to say that Anya McDonough of NUIG Mystics and Connor Quinn of Belfast Star join us now. Anya, to you first. Look, it's absolutely brilliant and just great news to just see this high performance element be added at such a broad spectrum, really, if it goes ahead and is across the country. But just for basketball right now, Anya, what does this mean?
Yeah, I think it's massive for everyone involved, especially in the basketball community in Galway and in Connacht. The facilities that are on show from NUIG are just top quality, and it'll be great to have international games being able to come down to Galway, and it'll be great for Galway people to see the international games so close to home. So I think it's brilliant for everyone involved.
Likewise, Connor, look, every centre of excellence is going to have access to expertise such as S&C, sports medicine, sports psychology, nutrition, sports management and administration, coach development and training. There's going to be media meeting facilities. It does seem like all the bases are covered there.
Yeah, and it's a great thing for us to have. We haven't played in over a year. Our domestic league didn't get up and running, so you know, anything at all right now for us to be able to get back on the floor and play and, you know, get into the weight rooms and get our bodies right is a big benefit for us and the whole basketball community.
Anya, it just looks like participation numbers at the moment are really high. Just looking around, just for me, I go up to Park and Douglas and it's every kid with a basketball at the moment. So there is a wave probably that are interested in the sport. How important is it for you as role models that you now have these facilities to provide a platform for quality for them to aspire to be like?
Yeah, I think it's huge. It's great for kids to be able to see the players go in so close to them and just being able to see them play and see how high quality the basketball has gotten over the past few years, and to have these now new gyms being put in place, I think it'll be great for, you know, young kids to see us and see a pathway that maybe they want to take one day.
Connor, 60% increase in basketball membership over the last number of years, which, you know, as Donica was saying, like, you do see it. You see it everywhere. You see kids going around with basketball. And I always love basketball because it's indoors.
And in Ireland,
it's brilliant. But just the facilities. I heard Bernard O'Byrne talking about, you know, how difficult it would have been to try and go and build these. But all the colleges have them right there on their doorstep. And it's just a case of nearly making use of what's all around the country.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of time until sort of basketball gets maybe the recognition it deserves for a young kid to start playing. You know, all you need is a ball in the hoop, whether it's your local park or whatever. And some of these facilities are sitting literally by my apartment for toxic Jordanstown. And, you know, for the last year, they've kind of been sitting and nobody involved with basketball has been able to use them. So just being able to, you know, get into the facilities and use, like you said, what's there, kind of to help bring basketball to, you know, the next level, because it is a growing sport. And like you said, it's indoors and the weather in Ireland kind of suits indoors. So it was definitely a growing sport, and I can see it go, you know, leaps and bounds in the next year or so.
Conor, excuse my ignorance now, but it's just my sport. Is there any fear with the clubs that, you know, using all these universities and colleges, that maybe the talent would start drifting towards those universities instead of the clubs?
With the structure of the Super League here now, I think there's always kind of been a close university link with some of the clubs, and I don't think, and also with what the seasons, the way they run, a lot of the colleges stuff doesn't take part in during like a Super League season for Toxic. So I don't think that that will pull away, you know, talent from local clubs to the universities. I just think that, you know, the better the standard that we can create here in Ireland will only drive the game on. And I think it's basketball is a small enough community that, you know, hopefully if everybody's on the same page, that it's about the entire country getting better, not just about, you know, our own clubs.
If anything, Anya, it'll probably enhance it, because there'll be a pathway there, you know, a clear pathway for players who want to go on to international level, maybe who want to go away, who want to play at an elite level in this country, but also there'll be a place where they can be facilitated, and those good links with college as well almost will make people want to stick with the game, because there'll be a pathway there for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I know when I was growing up playing the underage Irish teams, and I'm sure Conor was the same, you'd be training in low-end kind of gyms just anywhere that you get, and we'd be travelling to Cork or Dublin trying to get these gyms that were available to us. But having the facilities there now, it's just going to bring a different sort of professionalism into the game, and I think it would be great for all the young kids being able to see that, and like not have to worry, even for the coaches themselves, not have to worry where to try sort out a training session, when these facilities now will be available to them.
And only as well, the basketball is, it's quite equal when it comes to gender as well, and particularly in college.
Yeah, definitely. We had a great team this year, and so did the lads. The lads got to the final in NUIG, and I think the girls, we were just in the semis right off it. So the standard of both is great in both, and definitely we're treated, I think, quite equally in terms of the colleges. I know NUIG treat us the exact same, which is really great, and I think very few other sports can say the same.
Conor, Marie mentioned that some of the access you're going to have now, not only with just the facilities, but use of sports psychologists, nutritionists, medical staff. How helpful is that going to be for your development?
Yeah, I think obviously the higher you get up in sport, the margins between being, you know, good and great come down to you know, your conditioning, the mental side of the game, and I think, you know, up until now we've kind of lacked in those areas, but hopefully with the access to sports psychology, you know, strength and conditioning, that this will lend itself to trying to, you know, improve the game and the standard and sort of the talent that we already have here, because sometimes we find that, you know, kids will get to a certain standard and they'll want more and they'll want pushed more, and that happens that they usually can go, you know, scholarships to America. If it's not America, they go to better facilities in England, and they kind of flee the nest. Whereas if we can kind of keep them here and get them into a good college situation where they do have access to sports psychology, strength conditioning, and the entire package, that, you know, it will just, again, it will create a better environment for basketball here in Ireland.
I was in Chicago a few years back, and I went to DePaul University, and I saw the facilities that their basketball team had, and yeah. I can see why people might want to go and play there.
Yeah, I can see that.
Unbelievable. So Anya, what's the plan then? Like, obviously we're still in the pandemic, and it's a difficult time for everybody trying to figure things out, but it's been especially difficult for people who play indoor sports.
Yeah, definitely. I think we had maybe 6 or 7 training sessions around October time that we were allowed to all train together, but we didn't even get a game in the meantime. I think the whole thing was put off like the weekend before it was supposed to start, so obviously it's been extremely disappointing, and it's really tough trying to get back to your, you know, the way you want to get your fitness, your mentality and all that kind of stuff when there's no real set date that you have to get back. So it's obviously been a struggle, I think, for everyone, but hopefully they get the vaccines rolled out now, and the GA might come back, and then the basketball will follow soon after.
And Conor, just for yourself, for motivation, because it must be a struggle just not having that set time, that date, that just the knowing, really.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's very difficult because as an athlete, you're kind of looking at, you know, what stage of training you're at, and you always have something to look forward to and to motivate you, whereas kind of now you're in the dark. You don't really know whether you're trying to maintain fitness, whether you're trying to build strength, whether you're, you know, just you're in the dark in a lot of ways. So yeah, it is very difficult, but hopefully in the near future we'll get some sort of idea of a time frame where we can get back to, you know, get the domestic league up and running, because I believe it was Ireland and Azerbaijan were the only two countries that didn't get their domestic leagues up and running, and like that's big for a lot of guys, especially, you know, when you're 25 like myself, you think you're at your prime, and you're trying to get as many good seasons under your belt as you can, and then all of a sudden, you know, the domestic league doesn't go ahead, and there's lots of guys that, you know, close friends of mine like John Carroll, Adrian O'Sullivan, Jordan Blunt, that are away over in Spain playing, and you know, they're, I'm talking to them on a daily basis, and you know, everything's just running as, you know, the same for them. Obviously there's certain protocols in place, but it can be very frustrating to, you know, especially something you love doing and you're very passionate about, you know, seeing other people in other countries kind of move ahead with it and kind of also just sort of stand still and not moving forward. But hopefully in the near future that will change.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get good news soon to add to the good news about the Centres of Excellence. Áine McDonagh and Conor Quinn, thanks so much for joining us.